Welcome to What's Cooking in Hell's Kitchen, the officially unofficial podcast for Daredevil on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 7, entitled Semper Fidelis. I'm not really sure exactly what that name means. Obviously, Semper Fi is the...
Always faithful. It's literally what it means.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My dad was a naval corpsman, and my girlfriend's family is all fucking Marines. Her dad, mom, stepdad are all ooh-rah out the ass, so yeah.
Oh, that's what Semper Fi means.
Semper Fidelis, that's the short form of Semper Fidelis.
Ah, okay. See, yeah. I didn't know that either. All right. I don't know much of anything about the military, so makes sense. What did you think about this episode?
I don't care. What do you think about this episode?
You don't care?
Because
what do you mean you don't
care? This is the episode you've been waiting for, where all the birds come home to roost for Matt.
Yeah, most of those birds.
All these delayed hostilities have exploded in his face.
And I could not be happier that Foggy is, like, this bathroom scene where Foggy's just shouting at Matt. Like,
and he's got him dead to fucking rights.
Yeah, like, he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I loved everything about that.
Even Karen got it because he tries to, like, I heard screaming in there. Yeah, don't forget about it. And, like, you can't treat me like a secretary in this bullshit. And
but he's still brushing her off, which...
But
sucks.
I like the callback to the fact that he got all huffy in her apartment, in their his apartment, where she's kind of like, I don't know if I agree with the Punisher and whether he's better than Daredevil. And she says, I don't know, maybe. And then when he says, after their uncomfortable conversation post bathroom, he says, well, I'll see you tonight. And she says, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was a smart dialogue echo.
It was. It was good. They're moving. So they moved Foggy all the way to the end game on that, which I really liked. And they're moving Karen further down the road. So that's also going in the right direction. They just need to kind of finally hit that one point with Karen, and I will be satisfied. But,
and
it's taken a while.
What
to get
I really,
there.
Here's the thing. What I really liked about the Foggy dress down was how it shut down. Because as fanboys, we're always wanting an excuse to heroes, right? This is like, essentially, this could have been Tony Soprano's wife yelling at him, or Skyler White yelling at him, or Lori Grimes yelling at Rick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like it was smart because it head off a lot of shit at the pass. Like, you're going, like, well, Foggy, he's saving a fucking city. Cut him some slack. As Foggy says, you're the one that wanted this fucking case.
Uh-huh.
Like, if you want to go to building and beat the shit out of bad guys at night, don't stick us with all this shit during the day and then bail on us.
Yeah.
And then
it's
the one part of the case that I thought was interesting, you gut because you can't keep your vigilante girlfriend in check. It's like, it's brilliant because it really cuts every justification off because Foggy's not saying you can't save the city. He's saying you can't do everything that you want to do all the time 100%,
right.
Which is an entirely reasonable point.
Sure, and it's one that we've all been thinking the whole time. And to have a character that comes out and says it, plain as day, in such a righteously angry way is
And that's
is
why
really
I'm so
good.
Glad, because the thing that sets it apart from those other examples is that, like, you know, Foggy knows essentially everything about Matt, and there really is no justification for Matt to continue to lie to him. There really isn't.
Yeah.
He's doing it because it's a habit and it's a reflex.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of the other characters, you know, they don't know what they don't know, so they look, you know, it's easier to be like, well, you don't know that blah, blah, blah is going on. The one thing I really liked about this in a kind of like a Keanu Reeves whoa kind of way is the cliffhanger, the reveal.
Yeah, whatever that thing is at the end, the giant hole.
Because what I thought was so beautiful is that I thought the dirt that they were shipping was a trap.
Me too, yeah.
Like, oh, I'm spinning the wheels, like, how the fuck?
How do they know about his echolocation, that he can see through steel,
well,
essentially?
Well, not like that, like, but, like, if this is a dummy shipment, how did they know that he was going to steal the ledger to encode the thing to, like, it's felt like this Xanatos trap. But the fact that, no, they're just trying to get all this dirt out because of this goddamn hole.
Right.
What the hell?
I don't know. Why are they digging, man?
And this goes back to last seasons, like the Red Ninja duel and the that guy needing, you know, he was so pissed that Wilson Fisk was only going to give him a portion of the land that he thought he needed. Hmm. Like, what the hell are they doing in New York City? I gotta know. I hope it's cool.
Are they going to launch a missile from there? It seems like it's a deep enough hole that I honestly couldn't tell you what it's for.
Me neither.
I don't know what earthly reason you would have to dig a hole that deep unless you're mining.
Yeah.
And is it possible they're mining for something? Are they looking for something underground? Are they...
I don't know. Because that's the thing. Like, what would... Like if it's some ancient artifact, but what the hell would a Japanese firm be digging in Manhattan?
Yeah.
For, like, something along those, like, if it's some kind of supernatural deal, like the lost sword of Dragon Bumfucker or whatever. I mean, I don't know, or I have no idea. I have no idea.
I don't either. But it's a mysterious giant hole.
It's a pretty good hook.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's surprisingly ominous for just a hole in the ground.
Yeah, I tried to do a calculation based on at least, like, the lower limit for how deep it was based on, you know, what I thought the terminal velocity of the flashlight was, and then I'm like, oh shit, this math is way over my head for something I can do in like 20 minutes.
I think it's fair to say it's
super deep.
Yeah, it's real deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you
like
drop
deeper
a flashlight
than you would launch a missile out of, or deeper than you would,
like 20 seconds of free fall is really fucking deep.
Yeah.
So
hundreds, thousands of feet.
And
maybe.
I don't know, like the other thing I started as like, is that actually possible? Can you do that?
I don't
downtown
know.
New York with that, but I mean, it's a comic book, so
sure,
it probably doesn't reward that much thinking about it.
We'll just say they have a lot of water pumps there too.
Probably
pumping water out of that giant hole.
I would think so. Although you're going to quickly reach, I imagine, the bedrock.
Yeah.
Have you seen
for sure?
So you know how in Manhattan there's like two distinct clumps of skyscraper. Like if you look at skyline, yeah. So apparently, the bedrock is like this underground mountain range underneath New York City, and it comes close to the surface, and that's why you can build skyscrapers on it. The rest is more porous, loose surface, and you can actually see like a geographic overlay, and it's really cool how there's like essentially two islands of granite coming to the surface in Manhattan, where they can put all those big giant buildings.
Tell that to the people building in Dubai. That you can't build on porous ground.
Well, but they're
but
using modern.
The time,
that's what I'm saying. They're using modern.
The
techniques.
Time New York was built, the skyscrapers built early 1900s. Yeah. Sure.
Because I guess there's like I just read this a couple weeks ago. Like all these different ways you can now, without sinking stuff in bedrock, you know, how you can essentially make your own footings and stuff.
Yeah,
all
pretty using interesting. All that, all the latest technology in Dubai.
Yep, that's what the back half of Daredevil is going to be, essentially one of those
that's
discovery.
What they're like, they're going to buy. They're digging a
marbles.
Footing.
Yeah,
they're digging a footing for the world's most giant for a space elevator.
Ooh,
digging the anchor point.
Pretty far away from the equator.
Made
if I
out of
my physics right to make a space elevator work. But.
Made by Melvin out of carbon tubes. The same shit that Daredevil's helmet's made out of.
It's actually just going to be a string of helmets.
It's all.
It's just going to be just stacks of Daredevil helmets. And
yep.
Yeah.
It's all coming together.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant, the writing on this show.
It is indeed. All right, let's talk about some other stuff.
Okay.
What did you think of the courtroom stuff?
What
do you think of the choice to have Frank Castle walk into the courtroom to the Inception? Blah.
Not nearly as dramatic as that moment needed to be to justify that music.
Right?
I'm like, what are they doing?
Like, that's when Zod fires up the World Destroyer in Superman. That's when the city starts folding up in Inception.
Right.
Like, that's not Frank Castle shuffling in his little
slippers.
Orange suit.
Yeah. I was very confused by that. It's real strange.
Okay, I'm glad I wasn't the only one. And they do have, like, I like how they do talk about how the impossibility of getting a person a fair trial if something like this were to happen. It'd be like trying to find the Beltway sniper a fair trial in D.C.
Okay,
like,
right.
The guy was rampaging for weeks. Everyone has an opinion. No one has not heard of this guy.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, where would you...
Trying to get a trial for Bin Laden or something, right?
Yeah. Like, this shit goes down in New York. You couldn't fly a jury in from Los Angeles that wouldn't have an opinion about it.
Yeah.
You'd have to go to, like, one of those indigenous tribes in South Africa, teach them about Western
American
law and
right.
the league and their duty, and then, you know, try to get something out of that.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, and we all know... It's impossible. This man is obviously guilty. There's no way he's not going to be convicted. It all comes down to how are Nelson and Murdoch going to argue this case. and it looks hopeless at the beginning, and I still say it looks pretty hopeless.
Why do you think, I continue to be very puzzled by, I'm not sure if the decisions that Deborah Ann Woll is making or directorial input or what, but like another weird thing with Karen, when she meets Frank to go over their strategy, she treats him like her body language where she's holding the case file in front of her, like she's terrified of this guy.
Yeah.
And yet they've already had all these intimate moments where she shouldn't be that afraid of him.
And yet the other guys are trying to warn her, look, he's dangerous. Are you sure you want to do this
alone? That makes
alone?
Sense because they don't know what they've I been know. Through. But it's like it somehow got inside Karen's head and fucked her up with it. But
that's
and
the only thing
it only
of,
lasts
yeah.
for like 30 seconds and then she relaxes and then like, oh, I've done some digging and you got...
Right, so it's just like she did before.
Yeah, and I don't...
So
maybe
it's like every time she walks in a room with this guy, she's got to start all over again with her fear?
It might be an acting tick with her, because I noticed that in True Blood. A lot of times she would retreat to this flighty little bird routine, even when, you know, it didn't necessarily befit a newly immortal vampire.
I do like that they have an actual reason for her to be going it alone now, though.
Sure.
Because Frank's the only one he'll talk to is Karen, and he won't talk to her with other people present, so she really has to go it alone now. As opposed to before when she was sneaking into his house alone.
Yeah, and I also like that they're giving her something interesting to do that, like, you know, it's not, doesn't mean nothing that, like, with another character, it might seem like the Punisher's wasting his time to go over these hundreds of case files that he's already personally gone over. But when Karen says, well, you haven't gone over with me, that actually means something. Like, I didn't roll my eyes.
Right.
What do you think about the Colonel Ray Schoonover?
Who
this
the
is this,
fuck
his
is
former
that?
Commanding officer oh. for a character witness. Like,
yeah,
what's this guy going to come in and say?
He's not crazy. I don't know. He probably doesn't have PTSD.
What about the reveal that the so we found out that the medical examiner has been leaned on by people. I don't think it's the DA that leaned on him to fabricate his report. It sounds like these are the suits again.
Yeah,
but the big reveal there is that there was another John Doe. Died of multiple gunshot wounds. That was the primary target of the cover-up.
Right.
Any ideas of who that might be?
No, not at the moment. I don't know if you have any.
I don't.
Like, special comic
I don't.
Book
I'm
knowledge.
Not,
or...
I'm not, and I'm trying to avoid. There's been some people that are helpfully helping me with some of that stuff, and I'm trying to, you know, because I'm going through this. I haven't seen this whole season, and I'm trying to avoid inhaling it and getting ahead of the coverage.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm trying to like cross my eyes when I see some stuff like that. But anyway,
the other thing they do with Frank that I think is admirable for the writing is Frank doesn't want to argue that, you know, I've been to war, I have PTSD, because it's disrespectful for the people who
actually have PTSD.
And I felt like that was a fairly like non-pop culture type of thing to do, right? Like you see a soldier doing something that you can't explain and you're like, oh, PTSD.
Sure.
And it is somewhat disrespectful, you know, to both soldiers who don't have PTSD and the ones who do. And it's like,
but I got a kind of looking through the looking glass take, which is how the hell does he know that what he's doing is not a result of
sure. Yeah.
Like if this just happened to Frank Castle that never went to off and did all this dying and killing as a special forces sniper, would he have this extreme reaction to it?
I don't know.
So it's
that's
like,
a good question.
I get it that it's weird that like it's hard to separate the macho bullshit from him. Like, no, seriously, this is what I did, and with no psychological trauma, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but it's also nice that the writers aren't jumping to that conclusion so easily, right?
Yeah, or at least just the Punisher's not letting them get away with it.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought was really interesting is Matt fighting angry. Like, he seems disturbed by his own damn self on several points in this episode.
And that's, I just had in my head ringing the entire time, you're one bad day away from becoming me, that Frank Castle has been saying, or it said early on in the season. And I was wondering, is this the bad day?
Like, when he was smashing that window behind the pervy, cryptologist, professor, whatever. Yeah.
Worst cryptologist ever. We want a encryption that can't be broken. Oh, I'll give you a fucking
Sudoku.
Shitty version of a Caesar cipher. Yeah. Let's just.
But it's got kanj instead of Greco-Roman alphabet.
Right, which means anybody who speaks Japanese is immediately going to break it.
Oh, well, they're all...
It's the worst encryption I've ever seen. Not unbreakable by any means.
I mean, I don't know enough about crypto theory to know, like... because he's, what, couldn't it be a version of like a one-time cipher? In which case, how could he break it?
Right, right. I don't know. Maybe it's something more intricate than I picked up, and I didn't really listen super sure. close to what he was saying, but it seemed very, very simple with letter replacement.
But when he was doing that thing where he's interrogating by essentially threatening to throw him through glass, and when the glass like shattered at the barest touch, like it seemed like, shit, I almost killed this guy.
Right.
Because I, you know, like, is that...
And then I thought when he was rushing the building at the very end, they were going to go in and just
kill that guy with rebar, man.
Yeah.
Like,
slashed him up pretty good.
You got comic book rules where it's like, I guess blunt force trauma just can't kill someone.
Yeah.
Unless they make it very clear that he's beat the guy's head.
Even Superman punching you doesn't.
Sure.
He holds back or whatever. Right. Yeah.
But there was a lot of blood flying off of his head when he was beating him with a solid piece of rebar. And like
I was worried that he was just going to go all out there and start.
Sure.
Murdering.
But, like, is this Elektra's influence on him? Is it the frustration that he cannot keep this perfect separation between the daytime justice and the nighttime vigilante stuff? Is it the frustration that saving the city, he's disappointing his friends and also kind of I felt like the reason he blew up at Karen, because that's the other thing that this kind of ties into. When they're having this conversation in the loft about the Punisher's tactics, and he seemed like... to get angry and like, I don't know that that's a great reaction. It's like, oh, you have a difference of opinion? Get the fuck out of my apartment, kind of.
Yeah.
But it's weird because he says like he upholds as Matt Murdock the primacy of law, but he doesn't as Daredevil. And like, I feel like he's uncomfortable with the fact that I think you're right. This one bad day thing.
Yeah. The duality there is not like, there are a couple of things, right? There's his relationship with Daredevil and the law, which are at odds. And then there's also the slippery slope that Daredevil becomes Frank Castle, the mm-hmm. Punisher. And like, once he starts to, those things kind of follow a little bit. Once you start to say, well, the law doesn't apply here, which laws don't apply?
Sure.
Does murder apply? I mean, right now he would answer, yes, it certainly does. And I'm not going to murder, but I don't know if that's from a legal perspective. It's some kind of ethical, moral thing for him. But
sure.
He comes closer to that line every day.
Mm-hmm.
Or so it seems from what I've been seeing on the show.
And, you know, there's the whole, like, I think they skate around a lot of this due process stuff because he's got the built-in lie detector.
Right.
But if you're a low-level mook working for the, you know, Yakuza, do you deserve to get a triple concussion
right.
and skull fracture?
Because
you're guarding a hole in Manhattan? Like,
maybe you don't even know what you're guarding.
Sure.
Maybe you were paid to, well, I don't know.
I mean, Daredevil's ready to excuse Grotto.
Yeah.
And yet he mercilessly beats these other punks. Like, that's, I mean, it's this isn't exactly Shakespeare, but it's interesting mm-hmm. the fact that, I like the fact that it's disturbing him. And you wonder, like, how is this going to continue to impact his relationship with Foggy and Karen? How is he going to be able to square the circle eventually?
Right, right. It seems like he might not be able to continue in one of these lines of action. Either he can't be the lawyer or he can't be Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know which one's going to give. The other thing we learned is, I guess Daredevil can see through steel somehow with his vision. He can tell that all of these train cars are empty. Tell that the one
that
is
makes
full.
Sense to me.
And also he can see negative space. We talked about like, what if someone wore a stealth suit that didn't give off any sonar?
I actually was really grateful that I feel like they're being consistent with his powers. Like, I have yet to catch them fucking up.
And they're hitting like all of the notes we're talking about, right? There's like, we asked about the scars on his body. Uh-huh. Like, how he would explain those to Karen.
And they addressed
Elektra
this episode.
Episode.
How are you? What do you tell your lady friends? And he's got nice pithy answers. Like, oh, they're having so much fun they don't notice. But I think that's exactly why he's not wanting to jump in a sack with Karen.
Yeah.
Because...
It's so uncanny that they're answering the questions we ask in the previous episode. In the very next episode. Almost always.
Yeah. Which I feel
except for this drinking thing.
Well, but even then, like, is it that important that they deal with that, or is it important the fact that they have the confrontation?
Right. About him just shirking his duties more than being a drunk.
Yeah. I don't know. That's great because, like, Matt, the man, you know, it'd be interesting to see what Karen would think about it if he was there, if she reveals that he's Daredevil. But Matt's starting to look like just a shit. Like, what he does to Foggy here is inexcusable.
Yeah. What, he leaves him out in the wind.
Yeah, and even Foggy, knowing he's Daredevil, is like, fuck you, man. Like, I didn't ask for this. And I also didn't think that Foggy did a... I don't know. I don't know how to judge these courtroom scenes, because I didn't think the prosecutor, like, no one in a case this would I don't think, would give, like, a 90-second opening statement. Like, it'd probably last a whole fucking day. Right? The way I understand opening statements are, it's like, essentially, you're telling the jury what... These are the things we're going to prove, and these are the evidences we're going to introduce, and this is why, this is our theory, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can take a long time to get out. And then for Foggy to get up and essentially wing a defense, like, I guess it was good for that, but I felt like, all in all, I don't know, it read to me like it wasn't very good. Like, if I was a juror, I wouldn't be very impressed with what he was saying.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wasn't... persuaded by Foggy's argument.
But I can't tell if that's real or if that's just a letdown in writing and I'm supposed to think that it was amazing.
Yeah. I don't know. Ultimately, it's a courtroom. It's a TV courtroom scene, so that's how they go. But normally, you'll get like some music or something to tell you, hey, this person did a great job.
Or let me see the jury's mugs. Like, are the jury like nodding thoughtfully? Or are they looking at each other like, what the hell is this? Like, even Frank, when he leans over, is like, that's a thick slice of bullshit. Is that a compliment?
Yeah. I think the impression I get is that the overall episode is telling us this is going to be a huge uphill battle, and this opening salvo, even if it was good, didn't even scratch the surface.
Because Foggy said the scene before, if we get this medical examiner, and if Matt does the opening statement of the century, we might have a fighting chance.
Yeah.
Well, the medical examiner, for reasons I don't fully understand, was completely, like, their entire record stricken, which seems like that would have a huge impact on both sides of the case.
Right, and it does. I mean, Reyes doesn't like that either.
Yeah, that's off the table, so I guess that's a push, but there's no way I think that Foggy's opening statement was the best of the century or whatever.
No.
Even though Karen says, oh, you were amazing, and Matt says, well, you're great, they would have to. Like, that's just what they would say, right?
Yeah, and the fact that Foggy could stand up and say anything at all, given the situation, is amazing.
And I'm not just saying the start and stop nature of it. Like, that's one thing. But I'm talking about just when he finally got around. Like, I thought he started with, like, imagine you're 19, you're in hot sand, blah, blah. But it just kind of got lost in the weeds by the end. And so you think we're supposed to understand that this was barely competent and not what they need to be doing what they're wanting to do with this case.
I think so.
Okay.
That's how I came out of it anyway.
Plus, there's a lot of, like, unsupported conspiracy theory shit, which, I mean, I believe that this is what's actually going on because, you know, I know enough about what's going on with the Punisher as far as what they present on screen to know that it's not all according to Hoyle.
Right.
But if I'm a jury, I'm like, really? This is going to be some kind of wide conspiracy involved? I mean, this seems like making a murderer, which needed 10 hours to kind of make that case, and it wasn't entirely successful. So
here's the thing, though. Even if they prove their point, they're going to lose this case. Because, point of fact, indisputable, Frank Castle did kill those people. And for whatever reason you want to justify it with, it doesn't matter, ultimately.
But if half the jury believed that they were criminals that needed to be killing and that he was left with no... I mean, they might get, like, you're right.
I guess you could sway...
He's guilty of murder, but you'd get, I guess, jury nullification going.
I guess you can get an emotional verdict and just have them say not guilty, even though the facts obviously prove he is.
Essentially the O.J. Simpson trial.
Sure. I don't know anything about that. But yes, I think that's possible, but... What the fuck happens in that situation where the facts are obviously not? Is that just like the jury rules? Period.
I mean, that's essentially what, again, that's the O.J. Simpson deal is that,
it's
like,
crazy that to me that there's no mechanism when there's like physical evidence and all these things to
I get it. I know that that's something like, it seems like this is something that the court systems hate, and the jury nullification is a double edged sword because for every person that says, you know what? I'm not sending this 19-year-old to jail because he got caught with a joint.
right.
in Kansas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's also the racist in the South that let off people who killed black folk and yeah. lynch mobs because, well, he had it coming to him.
Sure, yeah.
So, like, jury nullification, like, anytime you let 12 citizens decide what they think is right, you're that's by definition extrajudicial, but also...
But it's supposed to be a measurement of society at the time, so...
It's all, yeah, like, it's part
how
of...
How do you...
It's not a flaw in the system, it's a part of the system.
Right.
And that I think the judicial system would rather it not be. Like, I feel like that if you ask most judges and... You know, legal experts, they'd probably say that maybe juror nullification shouldn't be allowed. That, like, a judge could dismiss a verdict that is... But what would that even mean?
How would you judge whether it's blatantly
like
wrong?
Now the balance of power shifts entirely more to the state. So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like it's an interesting thing that the juries can do. Jury nullification
is
a fascinating subject.
Yeah. But I feel like maybe we could be headed that direction if Foggy can... argue the case the way I think he wants to argue it.
Yeah.
You know? Because I think the facts certainly say Frank is guilty of murder.
Yeah.
Mass murder.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, the thing is that while Elektra...
And I mean, that's the whole... Let's not leave this point yet. That's the whole impetus for a guy like Daredevil, right? When the law fails, and this is something that Karen mentions, where do you turn?
Yeah.
You turn to guys like Daredevil. You turn to guys like Frank Castle... And that's kind of Karen's point, is she's coming around to his POV a little bit as she talks to him,
yeah.
gets to know him. And Matt is not, because he views it as a step too far, even though he's doing the same thing in principle.
Yeah, Matt's in this weird position where his best shot at getting his client justice is probably going to get him, like I think Matt wants the Punisher in jail.
Yes.
But he also wants to expose whatever, you know, caused him to fly off the handle in the first place and kill all these people.
Yeah.
Like, he wants him punished for...
He wants to take down Reyes, too, which I think is more Foggy's thing at this
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
But...
Because they have more personal animus. I mean, Matt yeah. has really never crossed swords
right.
with her. But yeah, like, what Daredevil wants is his middle path that I don't think exists.
Yeah.
Which will be interesting if that puts him
in... And I don't think Karen thinks exists, either.
Hmm.
I mean, she's at least softening on Frank's position.
Yeah. I want to talk about this thing with the medical examiner, because that's the other thing is everyone, I feel like that that's the one thing that I'm not sure about in this episode, because Foggy says it's almost going to be impossible to flip this guy just on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
And if Elektra didn't come and threaten to beat the piss out of him, he doesn't flip on the stand, which is devastating to their case.
Mm-hmm.
Him flipping on the stand but getting thrown out is also devastating to the case. There was a no-win scenario, so it's almost like if I was mad,
yeah.
I'd push back on that. Like, well, if Elektra didn't beat the shit out of the guy, you would be expecting to appeal to this guy's better nature? And I thought, like, some of this shit where he's like, well, I'll just ask him who doctored the records when he says... Or what was the Matt...
I don't remember.
Matt had on, like, this... he's going to ask him, who had you change report? Even if he says no one, then that proves that he changed report. I'm like, really? You can do the whole, how long have you been beating your wife, Mr.
Right.
Jones questions?
Right.
And that's actually
trick questions.
Yeah.
That
you know, like,
it's not evidence.
I don't think I feel like I need a law talk episode to know that that's not exactly lawyering.
Right. I mean, she objects to leading
the
witness immediately. She's going to object to that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Some kind of
objection,
unanswerable question.
The defense is being an asshole. I mean, I don't know exactly what it is, but that can't be allowed.
Right. But at the same time, like, so I think Foggy's argument here, like, is at least if Elektra hadn't come in and, you know, have this guy confess under the threat of whatever violence under coercion,
mm-hmm.
The Foggy would have had a chance at the guy, right?
Well, Elektra should have done
so
is threaten him and also say, you never, I, you know, I
right.
was never
you
here.
You speak of this. I mean,
yeah, you tell the truth and anything but the truth. And I, but yeah.
And so help me God.
Sure.
I will
sure.
come after you.
Sure.
But I think that's what Foggy's point is. Look, I would have at least had a shot at it without you guys interfering.
Yeah.
I expected at some point that Elektra was going to be on this couch and Karen would like come over
I
in the middle of the
so
night
too.
And shit would blow up. And
I thought so too, because
she'd go to Foggy. Oh, Elektra was over there. That's his ex-girlfriend from college. Oh my God.
Matt has definitely come a little bit further. He's no longer swiping as hard left as he was two episodes ago, right?
Yeah, they're both in their underwear in the living room. Like, Karen walks in on that.
Yeah, and Matt's now saying, why did you leave? Like, instead of being like, you're crazy, you're bad, you manipulate me, why did you leave? Why did you never come back? And her saying, what do you think? Because she says, she asserts something like, you don't know the whole truth, or if you don't know everything that I know, and you deserve better. Okay, deserve better, that's whatever. But what the hell does she know that Matt doesn't?
Maybe something about her past? Maybe we're getting an episode where we see a lot more about her.
Yeah. Also, that was interesting that she tried to kill a dude, which Matt specifically forbid. And the only reason she didn't kill him is because the gun was out of ammo.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Is that going to be something to where she kills a guy and...
I could see it, yeah.
Because that's the other thing, is like they have a very different conversation over stitching if she blows that guy away.
Yeah. Definitely. And
maybe that's the best thing for Matt at this point. I don't know if it's the best thing for New York City, but, you know.
Is she kind of like a stand-in to keep the story going while Frank's out of commission? Like this tension of will or won't Daredevil kill, and how does he feel about it?
It's a different type of, you know, like they're both seductive techniques. Like Frank is trying to put him into practical dilemmas where you have to do the math of whether one life is worth...
Yeah.
The preserving of one life is worth forfeiting 10 others by inaction.
Mm-hmm.
And like all this, like, I feel like we've had the same goddamn conversation over three different podcasts in the last week.
Yeah.
It's weird. All this, this synchronicity, right?
Right.
But I think that's
the running thread, is that they're trying to keep alive with Elektra.
But yeah, hers is a much more visceral, it's easier and it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically that. It's not like the horns of a moral dilemma. It's just like, why wouldn't you? Why are you? Why are you even bothering debate whether it's worth killing these guys or not?
Sure.
They're in our way. Paste them.
Yeah.
They did us wrong.
I would like to see why she feels that way. As opposed to Matt, because obviously they set them up as kind of opposites, so.
It would feel weird if they didn't get around to that. And we're really young, and I mean, we're just at the halfway point of the season.
There's six episodes in this? Seven?
We're at seven now, and there's 13, so.
Six more, yeah.
Yeah, I guess this is the hump episode.
Right. So, I don't know. I'd like to see more about Elektra's backstory.
It does seem like that Foggy's given Matt a bit of an ultimatum about this Karen Elektra thing.
About it all. I mean, he can't. Yeah. Everything he's been doing.
Yeah. Because he's like, seems like that he's no longer going to be the go-between him and Karen. He's not going to make excuses for him. It's just like, you know. And that, I feel like it's about time for Matt to bring her into the inner circle.
Yeah, there's...
He's either got to freeze her out and make this ultra-professional and say, like, all this kissing stuff is a mistake. We can't do this. Or he's got to bring her in.
Yeah. So what do you make of the conversation they have where he asks her about... You know, have you ever thought about getting a law degree? I know some people at Columbia, me and Foggy do. Hinting that maybe she should get more involved in the firm from a legal perspective.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of kooky because I don't... I mean...
She gets angry about being treated like a secretary, but matter of fact, that's what she is. She doesn't have the legal acumen to even begin to understand what they're talking about.
Right.
But I get it emotionally, like she's friends with these people. She shouldn't be treated like a nobody.
Well, and I was just more like, really? You got friends at Columbia? You're going to get her, like, how does she have a college degree?
Fast track her application?
You're going to get her through to one of the best law schools in America?
Right.
Because you got friends there? I don't know if it works that way.
Maybe. Nepotism is a powerful force.
But I think you got to have the credentials too. Like, nepotism only works if you could be considered. But I don't know. I mean, maybe Matt, I guess Matt knows enough about
her. I've seen House of Cards. I'm not sure about that. But
Matt's also not the president of the United States.
Right. Is that some way of slowly bringing her into that inner circle? Hinting at that idea?
No. It's interesting. I don't know. Like, I kind of like her Aaron Brockovich kind of role, where she's like a super paralegal.
Yeah. Almost like their PI.
Yeah.
They're Jessica Jones.
I like her in that role. If she's a full-on partner, then I guess it makes some things about the relationship more equal. Because that's the big thing it seems like is that right now the partnership between Foggy and Matt is not equal, because Daredevil is essentially the third partner in the law firm, and he's siding with Matt in every decision that they make.
Right.
Like, he's getting two votes for every one of Foggy's. And that is going double with the Karen thing, because she's not even aware of that dichotomy.
Sure.
Or trichotomy. I don't know. That's if I was Foggy, that's the thing I'd be pissed about. It's like, you've got this silent partner who is supposed to be silent, but he's pissing all over our business, and he's mm-hmm. pulling your strings, which is pulling my strings, and then you go and fuck off when you... That's something they got to solve.
For sure, yeah. I mean, Foggy's
like,
fed up with it.
It would be interesting if, like, every action that Daredevil did, they had to bring, like I'm seeing this future where, like, Karen and Foggy and Matt are all in this part as equal partners, and it's like a board decision. Does Daredevil go against the Yakuza?
The eyes
show of hands. Yeah. Yeah. And if not, then that's something Matt has to live with. Or he can fucking quit the law firm.
Right.
Because he can't keep doing what
he's doing. Or quit being Daredevil.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, but you have to decide what you're going to focus on. You can't accept the... And I get that Matt didn't expect this to blow up.
Sure.
But once he found out, like, you got to start saying no to Elektra.
Yeah. I mean, that should be... I don't know.
But then again, if, you know, the Mecha Godzilla... comes out of the, you know, 110th block of Manhattan and destroys the city, Foggy will feel pretty silly about being this bitchy about the opening argument, too.
That's true.
It's pretty good dilemma as far. I mean, it's a really good dramatic situation for as silly as a comic book hero thing could be, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm enjoying it. I've had very little problems as of the last few episodes, you know, other than the stuff I mentioned about them not talking. I feel like a large chunk of that is resolved this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if that's not resolved, it's certainly addressed, and that's all I kind of really wanted.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about the drinking thing, but we'll see.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see, like, what other... Because, you know, clearly this thing at the... What was it called? The Midtown... I forget. The tenement... The Midland Circle building... This goes back to season one, and I'm just really curious about where this stuff is going, because it didn't directly involve Fisk. I don't think Fisk was made aware of it.
Huh. Okay.
At least from my memory of their dealings and negotiations last year. We also found out that, and I got a lot of feedback on this. I'm going to read one of them, but there was a Easter egg last season where Foggy mentions his crazy Greek girlfriend from college.
Okay.
And we found out that, as I suspected, that he almost failed his classes, both because of her distraction and also dealing with the heartbreak of her trying to get him to murder some dude and then leaving him mm-hmm. high and dry.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. What else do we want to talk about? I think we pretty
That's
much
all
got
I
everything.
Got.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we talked about the giant hole that the Yakuza, the not Yakuza, the Fokuza, whatever you want to call them.
The hand.
That they're digging in Midtown, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I got inside information that's actually a copper mine from Bezos desperately trying to replace all the pennies that we're stealing from him.
Okay. There's a lot of copper under New York?
Loaded with it. Okay. Loaded with it. That's all that bedrock formations. It wasn't granite. It's actually solid copper.
Solid copper.
That's why you can build a skyscraper Jesus. That big. Like, you sink it in the solid copper, you got footing for days, man.
So he's replenishing at a pretty quick rate then.
Well, that's how fast we're sucking it out of him. I mean, that's you're looking at the wrong end of the funnel, man. Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon, crazy about copper, insanely jealous of it, and he hates the Bald Move Empire because we're the number one copper thief in the world. And you can help us siphon that. You can help us hollow out New York City. By going to amazon.baldmove.com anytime you're going to shop online on Amazon, because you get the same great service and sales and shipping speed. All that stuff stays the same. It doesn't even cost you anything. All it does is cost Jeff Bezos some pieces of copper, and they go right to our bank. Drives a man crazy. And also is making a pretty entertaining superhero drama on Netflix, I would assert once more. So if you want to help us out on that, amazon.baldmove.com. Of course, there's also the club at club.baldmove.com if you want to get extra content and ad-free podcasts and a bunch of other bonus features, which, you know, we have a pitch on the club page itself. We do appreciate all your support. Let's hollow out New York. Hollow out the Big Apple. Be the worm chewing through the Big Apple. Let's get into feedback. You can send feedback to daredevil@baldmove.com or on forums where it's all separated by show and episode and title, all that stuff. Please remember, if you're sending email, to put in the episode that you're either the title or the number that you're sending feedback on, so I can keep all that stuff separate. Sean B says, every time I hear Foggy talking legal jive, I want to see Saul Goodman show up as his backup. They could out legalize each other. He'd probably be a better partner in the law firm than Matt Murdock anyways. Opinion?
Which era Better Call Saul? Because I saw Jimmy try to argue a case where some kids cut off a corpse's head and fucked the neck hole, and that went poorly. That went very poorly. So
more poorly than what's going on with the Frank Castle defense so far?
I think so.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. True enough. But they do feel like they have... I don't know. Foggy's a pretty straight-laced lawyer, though. I haven't seen him do anything that would stretch the bounds of the law.
Right, but, you know, you need the... I don't know.
I guess that's not true, because even talking to Frank in the last episode was a violation of professional ethics.
You need the yin to your yang. Yeah. I feel like, you know, get solid Foggy in there. He's the yin. You get the yang and Better Call Saul.
Get the yin out the yanger.
Yeah.
All right. Paul S. has some overall observations. He wants to talk about, he's another native New Yorker, and he grew up in Long Island, currently works in Midtown Manhattan, so he wants to talk about the setting of Hell's Kitchen.
Ah, okay.
So the Daredevil comic, I believe, started in the 70s in an era of Hell's Kitchen, in an era when Hell's Kitchen was much closer to what the show currently portrays than what it is now. This is before the economic boom of the 80s and 90s and the Giuliani-ification of New York. Hell, I remember growing up and my parents making me close my eyes as we drove through Times Square, which is adjacent to Hell's Kitchen. I did not know that. As it was a conglomerate of sex shops, peep shows, and some of the shadier characters New York had to offer.
Wow.
The show and the Marvel Cinematic Universe has done a great job explaining that the Battle of New York in the first Avengers movie, which took place primarily in Midtown, economically depressed the area of New York and gives its show its greedy feel that honestly feels so out of place in modern-day Midtown Manhattan.
Sure.
That's an interesting point, that essentially the physical devastation has kind of left it as a little bit of a post-Katrina New Orleans, where there's some places that are just really shitty and haven't really been put back together right, as a way to stand in for the 1970s era, super corrupt, grimy Big Apple. I never really sat down and thought about that, because as a podunk living in Indiana, I just assumed that New York's a hellhole.
Manhattan is definitely not a hellhole.
No, it's not.
Manhattan, that whole island basically has been gentrified to,
like, I remember
to a point.
The last time I was in, the first time I went to Times Square was just after 9/11 in 2001. It was like in that December of that year. And I remember thinking, this is how I imagine Tokyo being.
Right.
Like, it's kind of clean and safe and, like, colorful, but, like, it didn't feel seedy at all.
No, it's not. Manhattan
corporate as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went there a year or two ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's all fancy. I think you have to go out to the other boroughs to find anything that you would consider seedy.
Yeah. He talks a little bit about accents, which we got into last episode, but then he talks about the Punisher, and we talked about whether we would be interested in a long-form 13-episode Punisher arc. He says, in his opinion, the first four episodes portrayed the Punisher as I feel he should be portrayed, as a force of nature. The reason the Punisher does so well in movies and even in YouTube shorts, he recommends we look up Dirty Laundry. Apparently there's a...
I think that's one that's that I referenced in another podcast today.
That won't come out before this one does. And
no, it will.
Will
it? I think. It depends on who knows.
Our timeline is warped into itself. We're doing a lot of stuff out of order so we can accommodate the spring break schedule of my son's. But anyway, he is great in short, powerful bursts where he storms in and literally fucks shit up. He's a catalyst for the plot and other characters, which is why he always makes great guest appearances. It's also why, overall, prolonged amounts of time, he fades. The Punisher comic has ups and downs depending on the story, but the Punisher is most effective when he guest appears in other comics, as his mere presence creates havoc. I'm glad that the Punisher-heavy episodes were quick, brutal, and propelled the plot of the first four, and now he fades to more of a secondary role, along with Elektra and the legal battle brewing between Nelson and Murdoch and the DA. I also think that's why a 13-episode Punisher series would quickly become dull. I kind of agree with that, in as much as that Punisher was arguably my first superhero love when I became, like, you know, a pre-adolescent adolescent. I didn't stick with him for very long because there's a lot of samey stuff after a while.
Yeah. His role in this, I think, is going to be interesting because now he ties into Daredevil in a different way. He now kind of represents the public's feelings about Daredevil, right? Like, if you say, okay, Frank Castle has gone around and killed all these people, and we talked earlier about the jury and how they were split and how they may even come back with a decision that says not guilty as Frank can be, right?
Mm-hmm.
How would that look to Daredevil? He wants this guy to be convicted.
Oh,
agrees that this guy has done wrong, but what if the people say he's done right and the Daredevil is useless and doesn't take things far enough?
Well, I mean,
can this be seen as a proxy for the people?
Yeah.
Hell's Kitchen?
I also think it's interesting to see if Matt justifies this as like, well, okay, we've got justice for Frank, so he's not going to kill again. Surprise, surprise, he turns into the Punisher, and he's just prowling the streets as kind of like a dark version of Batman.
Right.
What do you think about this guy's assertion that they're... I saw John Bernthal and how awesome he is. I'm thinking, oh yeah, 13 episode, couple seasons of this. But now right. I'm starting to think the other thing Netflix is doing are these movies. And we talked about how The Defenders might work better as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of getting Bernthal to commit to a bunch of seasons of 13 episode Punisher arcs, maybe that's what you do, a series of Daredevil movies. And he can maybe team up with Daredevil, or maybe he can team up with Jessica Jones. He works best when he has a set mission.
And
he searches and destroys that particular bad guy or whatever. I kind of feel like a Netflix movie model would work well for him.
Yeah, you could do that. You could also just weave him in and out of the stories of these different series.
That's true.
We know there's going to be three or four of those.
He could just always be the best part of any of the MCU Netflix series.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah. I can't wait for the three-arc Punisher thing to come up.
Yeah. Might be interesting, too.
So he also says, last week you were discussing how jarring it is that Elektra just appeared and we never got any foreshadowing of this relationship. In fact, in season one, there is a flashback moment where Foggy and Matt are in college and Foggy brings up that quote-unquote Greek girl, which is none other than Elektra Natchios. Not that this was much, but Matt would have also had to keep Elektra kind of secret, as so much of their relationship revolved around how Matt told her everything about his abilities.
Superhero thing doesn't work out for her, mm-hmm. she can always open up a nacho stand called Electric Nachos.
Nachos.
All night nachos. 24-hour nacho stand, Electric Nachos. all neoned out.
Sure. Straight for, go with this. You're the Punisher of this podcast, Jim.
What do you mean?
Because you just devastated us with the pun. Anyways, as he asserts, giving Foggy full details on the relationship would have had led to some uncomfortable questions. To be honest, the casting of Elektra and her motivations revealed thus far, a bit weak in my opinion. Huh.
I still don't understand her motivations, and I don't know
me
that
either.
I'm supposed to yet,
but
which is why I say I want more of her backstory.
I'm surprised how much I went from, I hate this character, and not like the worst kind of way.
Right.
Like no, this is bad for the hero, to like... I really like her.
See, I'm not there yet.
I like what she brings to Matt, which is chaos, confusion, and frustration, and ambiguity. Like, he's so goddamn certain.
It's true. It's true.
About stuff, and she's got him questioning everything. In fact, like, should I be in a relationship with Karen?
Yeah, and it's a friendly face that he doesn't immediately just want to punch like he does Frank, right?
Yeah.
Like, Frank comes off with his message as more abrasive, whereas she's kind of leaning into him a little bit.
Someone asserted on the forums, God, I'm using that word a lot. Someone mentioned on the forums that she would make a great Lara Croft. What do you think?
Okay, yeah. She could pull off a pretty good Lara Croft.
There's another Netflix spinoff. You want to do a series of proper Lara Croft movies.
Yep.
I never figured out why the Lara Croft movies never worked. Angelina Jolie was a great Lara Croft, fantastic, but the stories all sucked, in my opinion.
I wonder why. Was there not enough fun in it?
That was bad in the battle days.
Indiana Jones?
Has there been a good video game adaptation movie? Because I feel like no one's really figured out how to adapt a video game yet.
Yeah.
I know there's been some like Halo shit that's like animated, and maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, I don't know. But
I feel like Uncharted is a natural successor to that.
It's essentially a more sophisticated female Indiana Jones.
Right.
And you've got the perfect person cast for them. Why the fuck couldn't you come up with a great story for her?
I don't know.
Big miss of the late 90s, early 2000s, in my opinion.
Those movies are fine. They're not terrible. They're not great.
Okay. Somewhere in the middle. I would say anything that's...
that's a failure?
Yeah, I'm kind of like... I'm starting to realize that mediocrity I find is just like, why would I bother? There's so much good stuff in movies and television and anything that if you're not playing, watching or listening to the best of the best, what the fuck are you doing?
I don't know.
You watch a bunch of mediocre shit?
I mean, how much Nicolas Cage bullshit have you watched over the years and thoroughly enjoyed the activity of watching it?
I don't like his mediocre shit. I like his really bad shit. And I like his really good shit.
Okay. So you're saying there's no middle ground.
Like the lukewarm shit is what I'm rejecting. Paul makes a final point about superheroes. He says, I just scrolled past this. The theme of how much it sucks to be a hero is really explored perfectly. The only other movie to really portray this is Spider-Man 2. It's great if you're a superhero like Iron Man, who is a hero for shits and giggles, or Captain America, whose only job is to be a hero. And the hardest part of his day is being sad over not fitting into current society. For heroes like Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and Spider-Man, their superhuman abilities cause serious issues to their normal life and oftentimes mean they have to sacrifice personal happiness, wealth, and success to be a hero. When Peter Parker misses a date with Mary Jane because he's fighting crime, or when Daredevil leaves his legal team high and dry because he's helping Elektra or recovering from injuries, it is great that the showrunners show the sadness and frustration of negatively impacting your friends for a good cause and not being able to tell them about it, and yet live with the consequences.
Ooh, boy. Yeah. That sucks. I mean, Matt needs to disavow himself from the whole thing. He needs to go hands off. And Foggy essentially says that in this episode. He's like, look, from now on, I am not counting on you for anything.
Right.
Because I can't. I obviously can't.
But that's also not a long-term solution, because Foggy also says, this needs to be a partnership, or, well, why am I doing it? So it's not like Matt can just check out and be Daredevil.
Right. Right. So he's stuck in that relationship unless he wants to dissolve the firm, which maybe he does.
There's like Matt, Karen, Foggy can be happy. Pick two.
Right.
One of those three body problems.
Yeah. That's
another thing we're saying a lot lately.
Sure.
Daniel S. says, the Indian restaurant is real. We had a question about the one with all the chili lights and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It sits below and next to three other Indian restaurants in which...
Below and next to three other Indian restaurants?
And get this. When you walk by, each one tries to get you in like a used car salesman. I feel like it's like the Chinese places at the food court in the malls.
Okay.
Where, like, as you're walking past, they're like, try this sample. And they're trying to get, why would you pick them over the other three?
It's the sign spinners, sure.
Yeah,
It's H&R Block doing their thing.
The Indian version of that. They have fully Bollywood productions just trying to...
That's insane. Why are there so many Indian restaurants right next to each other?
Well, it's millions
of people. Is it like India Town? Is it part of the city that's a lot of concentrated Indian population? Or
I don't know, but it's called the Panatu Garden.
Okay.
And he linked the Yelp page, which I'm like, if I know the internet, there'll be a Matthew Murdoch with a review on Yelp. Turns out it is. There is a Matthew M. from Manhattan, New York. On 3/20 2016 left review. Came here with my friend Karen. Food was good. However, she couldn't stop talking about the lights. Great place, especially since the first restaurant didn't work out. Good wine, too. 4 out of 5 stars. Everybody's
so
a critic.
Maybe Panatu. So what was there first? The other three or Panatu or whatever it's called? Are they Starbucking these guys?
Or
are they
like
moving
Walgreens
in?
CVS?
Right. Uh-huh. Right. Oh, I see you got a location. Guess what? We're coming in with the lights. And people are going to remember our fucking lights, and they're going to ditch you guys.
Yeah.
Ugh, they're getting Starbucked.
Aaron R. Oh, wait a second. Sorry. That, some,
wait, that's me.
Well, it's A-H-R-O-N, and also it's an empty field. So I think I must have butchered your email and left you with nothing but a stub because I got nothing for you. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Sean B. wanted to confirm that the Deathlok character that I mentioned with the cybertech crap was involved in Agent Shield. I had like 5 or 6 people email this in. Sean B. was the first, but Alan B. was the more informative.
Okay.
He says, you wondered aloud during the show whether the Deathlok was going to be in the show or if it was just an Easter egg. Deathlok's actually a supporting character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC, where he appears in a fair amount of episodes throughout seasons 1 and 2. However, his origin is in a group called Project Centipede, so it's likely that Cybertech is just a random name thrown in as an Easter egg.
What other 2 superheroes is he sewn to?
What? Oh, okay.
Superhero Centipede.
Okay, Centipede.
That's a movie I want to see.
Sure.
That's where DC needs to go.
You know, you don't want Superman to be the head of the Centipede because his super shits will go through you like a rifled deer slug. It's just, you're not going to have a Centipede for long.
Yeah.
Steven from Florida.
Plus, you want him as propulsion at the back, right?
Sure.
So you can move very quickly.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think, like, should we spend some?
Do you sew Superman's ass to anything?
Well, you use, some kryptonite needles. Thread. Yeah, you wave some kryptonite around that. Steve from Florida. Matt went to the same orphanage. Okay, this is another Easter egg. Matt went to the same orphanage as the main character from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the boxer who fights Matt's dad in season 1 has a son in the S.H.I.E.L.D. show called the Absorbing Man. Interesting. There's a lot more ties to this MCU in the television thing than I would have suspected. But then again, I've never watched Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so...
Yeah, I haven't either. There's so many superhero shows. Who has the time?
I feel like I'm
most
justified
of them mediocre.
Ignoring... Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't feel like I'm... This is a controversial statement, and I know a lot of people told me that The Flash is really good and Arrow is really good, but I don't feel like I'm missing out. But there's also DC...
I certainly don't.
And the Marvel stuff is a lot more connected and thoughtful. And not, I won't say thoughtful because I'm not making a judgment call on the quality. It's a lot more interconnected.
Right. I don't know. I have very little interest in even the MCU. So
that's true. All right. Well, let's just stick to Daredevil then. Daredevil at baldmove.com is where you send feedback. And forums.baldmove.com is where you can also send feedback and discuss it with your fellow fans. That's all we got. We'll be back every Monday, Wednesday and Friday throughout the Daredevil crisis. We'll have your regularly scheduled updates.
Yeah.
I think this is released on a Friday and the next one will be Monday, but whatever. It's easy. Monday.
Who knows?
Is it Monday, Wednesday, or Friday? Are we still have Daredevils left to talk about? There'll be one out.
Yep. And we'll see you guys then.
Bye.